Well, hey, thanks for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. You are listening to episode number 114. I am sitting down today with a guy I've known for a few years here, Mr. Nick Canuel. He is and you know what? I feel bad because I'm probably butchering his last name. Nick Canuel. I am going to pronounce it Nick Canuel because that's what it reads like. But since I've known him for a few years and I bump into him all over the place, and I see him at a mutual job that he works full time and I work part time, I was embarrassed to ask him, somebody I've known for quite some time, how to pronounce his last name. So to avoid my embarrassment of asking him how to pronounce his name, I will embarrass myself in front of all of you listeners by probably butchering it. Nick is a producer and writer and now most recently a newsman with the Arizona Hometown Radio Group. That group, check them out, azhometownradio.com. They are the home network of 94.1 The Jack, 95.7 The Jack, KQ&A, 1130 AM. That's where I am once a month to host a radio talk show. KDDL, our country station in this area, and Juan, 107.1 FM, one of the top Spanish language stations in this part of the state, and KPPV, 106.7 FM. That is where Nick takes the reins as the news anchor there. So that hometown radio group is one of the leading media conglomerates in this area. Small town, family owned. We talk a little bit about that. We talk a little bit about Nick's time covering the recent election of a week or so ago. That was his first week at the news desk, was the election week. We talk about how he got involved in radio, how he got involved in music. He is most widely known in this area as a virtuoso. He is a master guitar player. He's been playing music. He started as just a toddler, plucking away at the family piano, and moved up to drumming in his dad's band in bars and clubs around this area at a very young age. We talk a little bit about that and what it was like playing as a kid in the bars up and down Whiskey Row. And we recorded this episode on Whiskey Row at Jersey Lily's Saloon, where Nick plays a few different nights a week with his own band, Little Larry and the Drive, an acoustic duo and solo as well. We sat down at Jersey Lily's upstairs overlooking the Montezuma Street, the Whiskey Row there. This past Sunday before he took the stage with Little Larry and the Drive, as well as Lori McDonald, who is one of the staples in the music scene in this area and out in the Verde. So I hope you enjoy my talk with Nick, whose last name I will continue to butcher, Nick Canuel. Check him out on Facebook at Nikolai Guitar and also on the Little Larry and the Drive page. Links are right there in our show notes at milehighshow.com. That's where you can also find our Amazon link, milehighshow.com. Scroll on down to the bottom and bookmark that Amazon link when you do all your online shopping. Now, it doesn't cost you a single penny extra. What it does is by using that link, It lets Amazon know you got to them through us. And at the end of the month, they give us a little thank you. A little small percentage of your online shopping comes back to us. So please bookmark that milehighshow.com Amazon link. And it helps us travel around to interview artists, musicians, and characters like Nick. And it helps us stay afloat, as it would, keep the lights on, keep gas in our van, and all that good stuff. So please use the Amazon link at milehighshow.com for all your online shopping as a free way to support our show. Also, on the About Us page at milehighshow.com is a link to not only the Amazon and our Audible link, but also our iTunes link. Go on iTunes, log in, and give us a ranking and a review. Please do so. And that is a way we can boost our visibility and start attracting more listeners, and then in turn get some new local sponsors. Also, today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. There is an Audible link at milehighshow.com as well. Please use that link. Go to the trial page at audible.com and choose from over 180,000 titles. You can get one for free by using the code at checkout, MileHigh. This will give you a free download. You can listen to it on your phone, either iPhone or Android, Kindle MP3 player, or right there on your computer. Again, Audible button right there at milehighshow.com, and use the code MileHigh at checkout, and you get a absolutely free Audible download, 180,000 titles, books, magazines, lectures, all kinds of good stuff on there. And you know what they got on there? Check this out. Since we're talking music and musicians and guitars with Nick, he mentions in the episode one of his favorite bands is the Beatles. How about this? While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the music of George Harrison, written and narrated by Simon Lang. It is a 10 hour and 50 minutes, almost 11 hours unabridged audiobook about the music of George Harrison. This is the summary it gives you. Far from being the quiet one, George Harrison was a writer and arranger of terrific power and beauty. It is an analysis of his music from the as a teenager, plucking away the Nashville influenced music from the States, up through his Indian and psychedelic and gospel influenced music. It is an in-depth study of the music of George Harrison, that is Simon Lang, written and narrated by the author. While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the music of George Harrison. You can get that absolutely free by using the Audible link at milehighshow.com, choosing While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the music of George Harrison, and using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. If you're not happy with your Audible download, you can exchange them at any point for free, no questions asked, that using that MILEHIGH code at checkout will get you a 30-day free trial and one free Audible download. So check it out, the Audible link at milehighshow.com, and get a copy of While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the music of George Harrison by Simon Lang. And you can do that. You can log in and all that while you're listening to episode 114, my talk with Nick Canuel at Jersey Lily's Saloon in Prescott on Whiskey Row. We hope you enjoy it. Oh, the intro music and outro is Voodoo Child, led by our guest Nick at the 2015 Battle of the Bands in Prescott Valley when he was there playing with Little Larry in the Drive. So sit back and listen to my talk with Nick Canuel at Jersey Lily's. I've had Ted Leonard on a couple of times.
Yeah.
And we've talked about, you know, just whatever, swapping stories and stuff. But, you know, sitting down with a guy who knows sound.
Right, yeah.
And me can barely figure out how to turn this thing on. Now I got a broadcast professional sitting here.
I don't know about the word professional, but I do it.
So, Jersey Little, this is kind of your home base,
It
huh?
is, yeah. I play here four nights a week. I have an acoustic duo on Tuesday nights, and I play solo every Thursday night, and then I'm with Little Larry in the Drive, and we have a split house band with Lori McDonald, the Combo Deluxe. So we're here, and then they're here, and then we're here, and... Yeah.
Nice. So, how long have you been running it here?
I've been with Larry for 5 years now, but I've been playing here off and on since probably 2005 or 6. So I was 14 or 15 when I first started playing here.
All right, how old are you now?
25.
25. It's 2006. I got to figure out 16 now.
Yeah.
So what you started as just a kid, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, I was overhearing a little bit. I don't really, I see you around town. I see you in the hallways over at KQ&A.
Yeah.
When I'm over there, but I don't know much about you other than everybody says, well, Nick's a virtuoso, man. The guy's been drumming. Was that your first?
No, piano was my first.
Piano? When did you start?
I was 5 when I started playing piano. And it's because, like I said, both my parents were musicians. And we just happened to have this beautiful, it's actually 100 years old this year, a beautiful Baldwin Baby Grand Piano. Built in 1916 that we had just gotten refurbished and rebuilt basically from the ground up. And I suddenly wanted to know how to play it when I was
at five,
right when we first got it done.
Other kids in your family? Solo child?
I have an older brother where there's, you know, so my parents and me and my brother.
Yeah.
And then two half-brothers who we didn't really grow up together. I know them, but I didn't grow up with them. I have one brother I actually really grew up with and everything. And Waylon's his name, and he plays...
Yeah, musical family.
Yeah, exactly. His grandfather played fiddle for Waylon Jennings, so there it was. Waylon plays piano, and he taught himself how to read music one day. He just decided that he was sick of not playing piano and wanted to do it, and just went and taught himself without the use of a book or anything, just how to read music.
Your older brother?
Older brother, yeah.
What's the age difference?
About 5.5 years.
Okay, so he's around 10, you're 5, you're watching him play and pluck around?
No. I was playing piano before him.
Really?
I was probably 17 or 18 when he first started playing piano. So he was about my age now, a little bit younger than I am now, when he just went, screw it, I'm going to learn how to play piano.
Interesting.
Yeah. But so I started on piano, and a couple years later, I started playing guitar, and then with that came bass as well, so I play a 5-string bass. And that came at the same time. And so piano kind of got put on the back burner, and then I started playing drums, and piano got pushed even further back. And, you know, and then I started singing and all this different stuff. And it wasn't until I was about 18 when I should probably start doing this again, you know, and for technically 20 years of playing it, I should be way better than I am on piano. I'm really kind of a hack.
Now, yeah. You know, I always find that the best artists, the best musicians, painters, whatever, are their own worst critics. So I just from what I've seen you playing, I'm not buying it. I'm not buying that criticism. Now, so I'm like the least musical person ever. I have trouble listening to a tune in key.
Right.
Just that's my ears don't work. I can't sing. Tried to play an instrument as a kid.
Sure.
And it did not last.
Didn't go well.
My parents really, I begged, like, second grade, that's when they opened it up at elementary school. Begged them to let me take an instrument.
Sure.
For some reason, I want to play saxophone. Have no idea why.
Sure.
And begged and begged and begged and begged. No, 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 no. And then when I finally warmed down, they said, okay, go, you can. They signed the permission slip. It's weeks into me begging.
Yeah.
And I go in, the only instrument left was violin. I didn't want to play that.
But that's a tough one.
Well, they made me. You begged, you're going to do it.
Right.
Oh, thank you. You're going to do it, and I just didn't want it. My heart wasn't in it. Couldn't figure out. Didn't know how to hold it. Nothing.
That's a tough one.
Well, and then, as a 7-year-old kid.
Oh, sure, yeah.
But they were adamant they were going to make me do it until my dad heard me play once.
Right.
And he says, no, okay, you don't have to.
Right. Yeah, violin, that's one I could. That's one my dad plays, but I can't. Like, I play mandolin, which is the same tuning and in the same octaves and everything. It's the same exact thing. It just has frets. I just can't figure out the bow to save my life. I get nothing but screeches.
We used to pretend sword
fights. There you go. Yeah. Yeah, bows completely elude me as to how they work.
7-year-olds with finely tuned instruments
exactly.
who were whacking each other over the head.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Now, I've heard this, and I don't know it to be true, but this is kind of what I've heard, is that if you have the piano as a background. If you can play a piano, it kind of opens the gateway
really
for other
helps.
Instruments.
Yeah, it really helps move on to the next thing, because piano, unlike anything else, is such a literal instrument. You know, everything is right lined up exactly there. You can't, like with guitar, you can end up with the same exact thing in two or three different places.
Yeah.
You know, it can change but still sound exactly the same. Piano, you don't get that. It is this way or not, and that's it. It is exactly one way no matter where you go. You can do like the same, say like a G chord in a different octave or set up a little bit differently, but it's only going to sound exactly like this in this one spot and nowhere else. And that really kind of gives you a basis of knowing where everything is. You know,
gotcha.
It kind of leads you to say, all right, so this is here and this is here, and it kind of lets you, it's a good foundation to start on, you know. And it's, you can apply stuff from piano to like a guitar or something like that. And in my case, I have to do it backwards because I got so hackish on piano that when I'm playing keys, I go, all right, where would this be on guitar? And then go, okay, it'd be right there. But no, it's a great foundation for anything, really.
Now, at 5 years old, you're plucking around and making some tunes. When did you start actual, or did you, like a formal education, a formal training
in
music?
I never took lessons.
No?
No. It's my, my mom taught me some, she taught me, in fact, the first thing I ever learned, fun fact, the first thing I ever learned how to play in my life was the Meow Mix jingle, if you remember the Meow Meow song. I learned how to play that on a $14,000 grand piano, and my mom taught it to me, so it's not like I just decided I was going to play some commercial jingle. She actually taught it to me.
So you were a sellout
but,
at what age?
Instantly at five. But so she taught me that, and I learned a couple of classical things and stuff from her. But outside of that, I kind of just, you know, went with it because that's how my parents did it too.
Well, and, let's talk about that. What would you say they were both musical? Where was growing up? Did you grow up here in Prescott?
Yeah, I grew up in Paulden. So
Paulden.
Born here in town and raised in Paulden.
Nice.
And not much else to do in Paulden.
That's where we moved. We've been in Arizona since 2004, and we're in Chino now. We're in the big city
of
Chino.
Big old town.
But we were in the metropolis of Paulden for a few years.
Yeah, I spent 20 years in Paulden myself.
Nice.
So like I said, there's nothing else to do there, you know? It's you either play music or you play video games.
Yeah.
And my brother played video games and I played music.
And what did mom and dad do? What were they? Professional musicians?
I mean, they've been playing my whole life, but they also had day jobs. They met, my dad's an avionics tech, and so he still does that. He's been doing that for 30 some
years. That made as much sense to me as you explaining what a G is.
Yeah, exactly. He's,
what's an avionics?
Basically,
is that?
he builds radios for airplanes.
Okay, gotcha.
And so me and him both get to answer to the FCC in our day jobs.
But you're stuck with Ken.
Yeah,
Byers
I got
Bill,
Ken Byers.
So
at least
I think his is a little more. Yours is a little more dangerous.
Yeah, a little bit. Mine goes on the public air. But so they were working together and met each other that way. But after the fact, my mom did a little bit of everything. She was a cabinet builder after that. She went to school for that, and we lived in Kansas City for a year. Cabinet builder and various carpentry stuff. And she did a little bit of everything. She was a truck driver back in the day. I mean, she did.
Wow.
She was never happy at a job. It was always, let's do the
free
next
spirit.
Thing. Yeah,
and,
very much
and
so.
And music was in that mix
Absolutely,
as well.
Absolutely, yeah. I have a guitar that I always say is more of a legacy to my mom than I am.
Oh.
Things in the background of every picture I've ever seen of her almost. It's ridiculous.
Now, what was mom and dad playing? Were they just playing around here?
Yeah, they played around here for years in a band called Latigo that I was in for a while. Yeah, I played drums for Latigo when I was younger, and dad started that one, and then mom came in late 90s sometime, and then they grew their own drummer, so I came in like 2004.
Now, was it a matter of wanting more kids, or they just wanted to cut down on the expenses of paying band members?
Right. It all just sort of happened. It was not meant to be a family band, but then suddenly three of us with the same last name out of four people in the band were there. But it was a fun band, but yeah, mom came in because they're like, oh, crap, we need a bass player. Hey, you play bass. And then I came in and went, oh, crap, we need a drummer. Hey, you play drums. And
now, was that some of your first pro gigs?
Absolutely, yeah. My first
on
full
the drums?
Four-hour gig was drums, yeah.
And what year was it?
That was 2004, so I would have been 13.
13 years
old.
Yeah,
we were playing some like wedding reception type thing, some party. And it was, I was nervous as you can get because I was terrified. Yeah. I mean, I was 13, and we almost got rained out, and I was, like, hoping that we would. And we were over there at Watson Lake under the gazebo.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget. At one point during the night, someone came up and went, you know, you guys are really good and we really like what you're doing, but we want to hear that kid rock. And so my mom goes, all right, well, take a drum solo. Like, the one thing I'm like, don't give me a solo. Whatever you do, don't give me a solo. And sure enough, this guy makes a point, so they give me a freaking drum solo.
Now, what were you guys playing? What,
country.
Country. Original stuff, covers, a little bit of
mostly
both?
Covers. If we did, we had a few originals, but it was mostly cover stuff, because honestly, if you're going to play in Prescott, that's kind of what you have to do. People want to hear stuff they're familiar with, you know?
Play to the favorites.
Exactly, yeah. Which is how you end up with certain songs on your I Hate It list, because...
Name them off. What do you...
well, the obvious ones are Sweet Home Alabama, Old Time Rock and Roll... Freebird. If I never hear someone yell Freebird again, it'll be too soon. And then in the country world, you get stuff like Friends in Low Places and Fireman by George Strait. It's not that they're bad songs. It's that, oh, man, I'm sick of playing them. Yeah, you just get tired. Oh, Mustang Sally and Brown Eyed Girl are two more.
Great songs.
Yeah, but everyone loves them.
Yeah, when you're playing them four nights a week for the next group of drunks
tired.
At the table.
Yeah, you get tired of it once in a while.
I spent the last 35 years, most of it behind the camera, and a lot of those years, you know, in the mid 80s through the 90s as a wedding photographer. So if I never hear Celebration again,
oh my God, I bet
I will be a happy guy.
Oh, I bet.
When the Macarena got popular, I was getting out of the wedding business.
Oh,
and
man.
Was very glad to do so.
I would bet. You know what the next big one's going to be? Is going to be Uptown Funk. That song is one that we're never going to get away from again. And I liked that song when it first came out, but we mentioned Ken Byers. Because of Ken, and I love Ken, but because of him, I've heard that song single day since it came out at full blast. And I'm down the hallway from him, and I still hear it coming straight out of his office.
Does he do a little dance? Does he?
Oh, he's such a ham with it. He's a total ham with it, and he knows it, and that's the thing.
So how you're playing, going to school, I'm imagining?
No,
at the same
no time for
no?
school.
No?
No, I work 5 days a week, and
no,
I play
no, no.
four
I
nights
mean,
a week.
As a kid. When you,
oh,
when
as a school. Yeah, as a kid, yeah. Well, yeah, I was.
I bounce all over the place.
Yeah, I got you. Yeah, no, I would you know, play guitar for something like 3 or 4 hours a night and somehow manage to get my homework done.
Now, where were you, Chino High? Or?
I actually went to high school at a tiny little place here in town called Kestrel.
Kestrel,
which
okay.
no
yeah,
longer
yeah.
exists, unfortunately, but it was tiny, tiny little school.
Now, when did they close up? Because I remember doing some stuff with Kestrel not that long ago.
2-3 years ago. It hasn't been real long. Because I graduated, though, 9, so it's been after that.
Did they morph into something else?
No, they kind of sold into... the building sold into something that was kind of like an online high school, but you still go there. And then they've since closed up. And so I think it looks like it's still a high school, but I'm not sure what it is.
Were you playing music for school? Like, did they have a band program?
They didn't have band. No, there was only 93 of us when we absolutely maxed from 9 through 12. And that was the most we ever had. But no, it was you know, like an alternative sort of artsy high school. And so there was a lot of musicians there. And, in fact, our drummer and I went to high school together. That's how we met, and now he's been with us for almost 4 years now.
Oh, cool.
But there was a lot of musicians, a lot of artistic-type people, and that was the whole idea behind that school was, you know, get the maybe a little bit off, you know, outcast sort of kids who were a little bit weird, maybe, which a lot of us were, and I'm definitely including myself in that group. But, it's how it was. It was just... Let's be you and figure out who that person is.
Well, in traditional education, traditional primary and high school and that, you get if you've got creativity boiling out of you, which obviously you do and a lot of other folks that are deep into the arts do, if you don't have a strong outlet for that, that's all you're thinking about.
Right.
In math class, that's all you're thinking about. And the way cutbacks since, you know, I'm old, so when I was in high school in the 80s, early 80s, they were really cutting back on a lot of the non-essentials, as they called them, the arts, the music, even sports. If you don't have that kind of outlet, you can't concentrate. So giving you the opportunity to express that and then be able to focus. Okay,
it was really cool.
Something else. Yeah.
And, I mean, you know, it was an awesome place to kind of grow up and figure out who you were, you know? Because, I mean, when you're... You know, a teenager, I'm 14 through 18, I was going to high school. That is a really weird time in your life where you have no idea. You suddenly have all these, like, feelings and opinions that you don't understand and stuff. So it was a good place to kind of grow up with other people going, hey, maybe let's just focus this into music or whatever in their particular case.
Like my folks did. Just lock it all down. Just
Boil it right down. Yeah, just repress it and explode and then repress. I think that's the Irish Catholic way of doing things, if I'm right about that.
So you're playing, were you this whole time still playing with your folks through high school?
Yeah,
or were
yeah.
you also, I, did you have some high school bands as well?
I had an acoustic duo for years called Nixon. And my partner's name was Sonny, so it was Nick and Sonny, which is just adorable.
Nice.
So Nixon. But yeah, we played together for about 5.5 years, and we kind of grew together a lot as musicians. We figured each other out a lot, and we both started singing because the other one did. We were both just basically mutes. We played guitar, that was it. And we always said, one of us is going to start, and as soon as we do, the other one's going to be right behind. And sure enough, he did it, and a week later, I was doing it. You know,
what kind of stuff were you guys playing?
A lot of the type of stuff I do now, a lot of like classic rock and an obscene amount of Beatles songs. I'm a gigantic Beatle freak on my set list. There's probably about 16 or 17 of their songs, which is unnecessary to have that many. But I love them, so you know, we're doing a lot of that type of stuff. And real acoustic-y, just like a lot of slow stuff, but not so much of that now. We do a lot of that type of stuff, but we try to keep it more upbeat and fun and stuff now than we did then.
Put it towards the room you're playing and
exactly,
the crowd you're playing.
We were playing in coffee shops then. That's not, you know, loud, high vocal range type stuff. But, you know, here at Jersey Lily on a Tuesday night at 9:30 at night, that's okay. That's you can go with the, you know, in-your-face type stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you like on a Sunday afternoon, folks are coming in, having a couple of drinks, relaxing, especially in the summertime.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Summertime in Jersey is an awesome, awesome Sunday. That's a really fun Sunday.
You can't beat a place with free popcorn.
Oh,
that's
I know, right?
That's the key to me.
I know, yeah.
Free.
And
I
think
it's free anything.
I don't think there's any popcorn anywhere else on the road, so come to Jersey for popcorn.
So how long, when did you hook up with the radio station?
About 2.5 years ago. Funny enough, I was here in Jersey. We had just gotten done playing, and I met this girl on accident. I just ran into her and started chatting. Her name was Lex, and we hit it off instantly. Me, her, and my drummer, we're all just like best friends the second we met. And she's, you know, I mean, I kind of naturally have sort of a dramatic radio kind of voice. And she said, you know, would you be interested in working in radio? I said, well, duh. And she goes, well, I might be leaving the station soon. And so we got each other's information on Facebook or whatever, and a few months went by, and I never heard anything from her, and I just went, yeah, okay, so that's never going to happen. But I started getting mail for someone named Alexa Althoff, which happened to be her name, and I went, that's a little strange. There can't be a lot of those. So I sent her a message on Facebook. I said, I think I'm getting mail for you. Did you happen to live at this address?
Yeah.
And she goes, oh my God. And then described my house. She goes, 3-story with a deck out back overlooking the ravine. I'm like, whoa. It turns out she used to live in my house before I did. And so that put us, which is some seriously small world stuff. So that put us back in contact with each other. And about 2 weeks later, she said, hey, dude, I'm leaving. If you still want to work in radio, get me a resume.
Oh,
and
nice.
I did. And I went in, I interviewed with Sanford, the boss, and was hired on the spot. And he didn't tell me I was hired on the spot. He took me to my office where I was to be training now with Lex and introduced me to someone I work with now as Lex's replacement. That's how I found out I worked there. So that was Wednesday. My first day of work officially was Monday.
And what'd you start doing? What was your...
My title at the time was sales assistant. So I was really working with the salespeople. I was doing a lot of ad writing, building proposals.
Nice.
And then I
the
moved into...
On.
Yeah. Then I moved into production on Ken's side a lot. So now not only voice ads, but I do news, I do weather, and I produce a lot of stuff. So I put all the sound effects and music and everything together with everything, and I do a lot of that at the radio group. And it's a lot better than writing ads. Yeah. I was never a big fan of that.
Yeah.
I did it all right, but
I always hated the crossover. And years ago, decades ago, when I started in the journalism business, there was no mixing of the editorial and the advertising sides.
Yeah.
And as the industry changes and everything else and social media and that, the blending of the editorial and the advertising side is getting a little more and more.
Well, sure, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just I hate doing stuff like that too. It's just,
right.
When you're writing ad copy or now every once in a while I'll be doing verbiage for business websites and things. Sure. It's like, well, we want it to sound like a news story, but it's got to be an ad. It's like, right. Yeah. It was never my favorite, and I never was formally trained in marketing or ads.
Sure. Oh, me neither.
It was a different animal for me, and I right. kind of...
And I, for me, I like to do the kind of jokey ones once in a while where breaking news from some business or whatever, and you do the whole bit. Yeah. I did one like that for, I think, Yavapai Plumbing and Heating once. And, you know, we took it as a whole news thing, just kind of as like a jokey sort of ad. That thing I can see, but when it starts getting to where you're not sure if you're listening to an
infomercial.
Ad or a news, yeah, exactly. Yeah. And we do a pretty good job of keeping them separate at the radio station. You know, we have... PSAs, which are meant for that. We have news, which is meant for that, and ads, which are meant for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, they all have, and then a couple other features and stuff like that in between. But, you know, they serve their purpose, and we try to keep them as they should be, you know, without too much, like, doing a news story about someone having a sale somewhere or something like that. That's a little over the edge.
I tell you, in print journalism, it's changing more and more that way. It's odd. Huh. It's very odd when it gets dictated what stories you're covering depending on how big of an ad size they
right.
gets ugly. It gets ugly. It gets some of us oldsters kind of riles us up. I'm glad I'm not in that field full time anymore. I can't take it.
Yeah, don't blame me. That's a little bit it can come across as a little skeezy.
Yeah. Moving to this area when I did, we came out here in 2004 from San Francisco Bay Area, there were very few, independent stations anymore.
Sure, yeah.
Especially where we were. Even some of the ones that were kind of alt or independent were still owned by some of the big companies.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Coming to this area, and we still have... locally owned
locally
station.
Owned,
It's really nice to hear because you get such a wide mix of different things.
Yeah.
You got like Ken in the Morning with more of a top 40 kind of thing.
Yeah.
But you also have local talk, which I drop in and fill in every time. I get to hear Nick introduce me as a guest host. But DJ's show highlighting local stuff, Bill doing local news.
Yep.
I really like that, and you come into it. Would you say you've been there two and a half years?
Yeah, I started St. Patrick's Day 2014.
You pop into an industry that, I mean, not knocking, it's just realistic, just like print and just like everything else.
Yeah.
Almost a dying industry.
It kind of, FM radio is a little bit on its way out, and that's because of streaming services like Spotify and Pandora and things like that. But the fact of the matter is, when that stuff goes out on your phone or when something dies or whatever, radio's still there.
Well, not only that, you're not getting the local news feeds on there. And that's where, you know, Bill and you producing this stuff and you coming on air. Are you doing more news?
Yeah, I'm on news
stuff?
On KPPV now.
As of
this week.
Nice. Congrats.
Yeah, thanks. And yeah, the week of the 2016 election, I started the news. That's a weird time to start.
Yeah. Did you, let me wrap up here real quick, but listening to that and DJ Phone and that, talking to local newsmakers, local musicians, authors, business owners and things, something you can't get.
No, you
on
can't.
Streaming
exactly.
You know, on the bulk big house stuff.
Exactly.
Now, what was some of your stuff that you were doing on election eve?
Well, on election eve, it was really kind of... I was actually on election night. I was here at Jersey playing because it's a Tuesday, and so I had my acoustic duo. But it was just basically we're all just waiting to find out, like, you know, putting out the stories like, here's your chance to vote is, you know, you got to be done by, I think it was 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, you know, and so we were driving that point home, like, make sure you get out there and vote because it doesn't matter if you agree or disagree. If you haven't had your voice heard, then no one's going to hear it, you know. So we were pushing them, just make sure it doesn't matter who you vote for, just get out and vote, you know. So we were pushing that. And then after the election, because we try to stay, you know, local as much as possible, everyone already knew who won the presidential. So we were covering different topics about certain things that had gone through here in town, like in Prescott Valley on the tax thing. I've already forgotten what it was exactly, honestly. But that, and then with the vacation rental home tax business license stuff, we were covering stories about that after the fact and making sure everyone knew this is what happened. you know,
these
make
are the
sure
changes you're
going
to have to deal with.
This is what's happening in our community, locally. We were making sure they knew what's happening in the Prescott Quad Cities.
That was another thing odd for me coming, not so much odd, but just eye opening. Coming out here from a metro area, from San Francisco Bay Area, in my town, it was considered a small town. 150,000 people.
Wow.
Small town. We didn't make it. The weather map on the evening news, you know, showing the weather, it would go Oakland, skip us, go to San Jose.
Oh, yeah.
We were right in the middle. We were too small. And I moved from 150,000
to... What town is that?
Hayward.
Hayward, okay.
California.
Gotcha.
I think they're hovering around 200,000, maybe a little more now. But back then it was about 150,000. We go from there to Paulden.
Oh, wow,
At the time it was 3,900.
that's about right, yeah.
School board elections, unless you were running or your friends were, or you worked for the school district, nobody really knew or cared. County stuff was, everybody was really apathetic about it. And maybe that could have been the time frame, too.
Could be, yeah.
But out here, when I started working for PNI, WNI in 05, looking at the level of interest in everything from constable to supervisors to, you know, school board elections and
sheriffs,
things.
Sheriffs, everything.
Yeah, just seeing the level of interest, it was odd for me.
Yeah.
And then now one of my big clients is a couple of local towns where I do press releases and things.
Sure.
And for a guy like myself who's quite frankly not that interested in politics,
right,
but to kind of be forced to at least know what's going on and watch it and tweet out and everything else, it's interesting to see the level of participation that not just the people running are
involved
in.
Yeah, no, but, and it really is. It seems to me that in this whole Prescott area that people, because it's such a small area, you know, Prescott's about 40,000 people. Can't get any bigger. We're locked in here. You know, we can't expand in any direction. So we have this much space. That's it. So it's never going to get much bigger than this. Prescott Valley has nothing but room to grow. But even so, Prescott Valley is about the same size as Prescott. It's a little bit bigger now, actually. But because it's such a small market and because odds are you're going to know someone running, that, you know, people want to be involved. They want to make sure that the person they care about is, or, you know, that they agree with, at least, is who's going to get in.
How at all, or were you surprised at how the presidential election turned out?
You know, I really kind of didn't know what to expect with it, because honestly, to me, this election seemed less about, like in the last one, you were either an Obama supporter or a Romney supporter or a third party. In this case, it was kind of like, it seemed to me that most people were voting for what they thought was the lesser of two evils.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, that's how my vote went. I voted for who I thought would maybe suck a little less, you know. and with the Trump win, I'm not surprised that Trump took Arizona. Obviously, Arizona is a very Republican conservative state. I don't think that I was surprised. I think I'm just kind of... what surprises me is that out of over 300 million people that we came up with these two who it seems that no one really likes. That's no one really seems to like either one of them all that much. So that's what surprises me, is that, like, well, if that's the case, then why did this end up this way?
Yeah.
You know, I think it could have gone a different direction and more people would have been happy. But ultimately, no one's ever going to always be happy, you know, with how it goes. And all I can say is that no matter how you or anyone voted, that he's the president now, or he's going to be the president now. And so hopefully he doesn't mess it up. I mean, we got to get behind him and hope that he does a good job. That's going
to
happen.
Interesting to see.
Interesting's a good word for it.
I am very, if you could do a cross section of the population, I am probably the least political person you'll ever meet. I like to observe. I'll sit there and watch.
Yeah. I'm along
and I get
the same
frustrated
lines.
Like everybody else, you know, when things aren't going the direction that you feel they should. But overall, I sit and watch. One of the things that I deal with Town of Chino a lot. That's somebody who I work with quite a bit. And I sat down and I sit down with the Mayor Marley quite a bit to, you know, we'll sit and have coffee. And when we first met, he asked me, he goes, "Well, where do you stand on here? Where do you stand on there?" I says, "You know, I, I'm watching.
Right.
I'll observe and I'll report on what I see.
Right.
And he goes, well, no, what do you think? And I said, you know, don't take this the wrong way. I have a habit of doing that a lot.
Yeah.
Where I try and say something that's complimentary and it comes out wrong.
Right, yeah.
So I'm explaining myself quite a lot when I deal with people, right. Especially in politics. I said, don't take this the wrong way, but I think, and a lot of people don't agree with me, but I said, I think it's all kind of futile. That's how I view it. Because you're working in thirds. I break everything down to thirds.
Okay.
You got in the mayor's case, and this is the conversation I was having with him. I said, it's thirds. A third of the people hate you. A third of the people love you. And a third of the people go, who?
Yeah.
They don't know who you are.
Yeah.
So when people get into a position, especially at the national level, this is my take. You're trying to make so many people happy.
Yeah.
And there's so many people that are not in favor of what you're doing. There's so many people who are apathetic about what you're trying to do.
Right.
You could make 100 promises running for office. If you can get 3 of those done, that's successful.
Right.
That's a successful run. So many people were worried about what they feared Clinton would do, what they feared Trump would do.
Yeah.
When it all comes down to it, it's like, you know, it's going to be, there's too many checks and balances.
Exactly. And that's the thing. That's kind of how I looked at it, too, is like, well, they're going to have red tape no matter what.
Yeah.
And they're going to have to go through a headache in order to get anything done no matter what, because that's how it goes, no matter who it turned out to be. And so in this case, it turned out to be Trump. And the thing is that the Republicans have the whole bit now.
Yeah.
They're
the House,
the majority everywhere. And so that's going to ease things up for them a lot. So we'll see what that means, you know.
Well, before we switch back to Nick the musician,
sure.
Let's stick on Nick the newsman for a little bit. What do you see locally that folks are going to be are there going to be any big changes locally, or are there any, what do you think the hot buttons are that citizens here are going to be looking at
here
in coming years?
In Prescott, I think a big focus that seems to be going on lately is Prescott is a major hub for rehab, and the funding isn't always there, and the houses, the halfway houses and things like that don't always offer the best solution. I'm not saying that they're a bad situation, because it's awesome that we have stuff like that. It's awesome that we can offer a place for someone to recover.
A haven for people,
But I think there's been a stir about it lately. You know, Stringer, that was one of the things he was running on, was reworking our rehab situation. And so I think that's something that may end up getting touched on here in town. But honestly, in Prescott, it's such a conservative town, I don't think they want to change much. And I don't blame them. It's a nice little town, you know. The news story I'll be covering off and on for the next month is going to be the courthouse lighting.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a small town, and it's a sleepy little town, and it doesn't need to change all that much, and I don't think it's really looking at changing all that much here.
You touched on how Prescott, we're in the desert, so everything's landlocked, but there's not really room for expansion here in Prescott. Prescott Valley, Chino Valley, really.
Yeah.
Chino Valley's landmass-wise is the biggest town in this area.
Yeah.
And that's one of the...
Same with Paulden. Paulden's like 38 miles wide. It's huge.
Yeah, and that's one of the big items of contention with people who want things to stay the same.
Yes.
There's other that, you know, we don't have any property tax in Chino.
Right.
So we're strictly based on sales tax.
Yeah.
And in order to stay solvent as a town, we got to lure in business. And there's folks that say, you know what? I don't want to live next to a strip mall. If I wanted to do that, I'd be right off of Robert.
Exactly.
Or I would be in Glendale, or I'd be back in Riverside.
My mom hated the thought of expansion in this area, and that's something she always just detested, which is why we lived in Paulden, because she wanted to not be in town. She wanted to be where there isn't anyone.
Yeah.
And she passed away before that family dollar went in. And in a way, that's a good thing, because that family dollar would have killed her. She would not have done well with that place. And now there's an Ace Hardware, and that she would have moved. I swear she would have moved after 20 years living there. That would have done it.
Yeah. Yeah, there's and again, it goes back to my ideas on politics is that you're never going to make everybody happy.
You're never going to make everybody happy.
So it's kind of a constant aiming for mediocrity.
Yeah, exactly.
And I don't mean that as a slam dunk.
No.
I'm sure everybody has great intentions,
right.
But you can't make everybody happy.
You've got to try to find the common denominator, you know?
Yeah.
It's just, where is it? And what, you know, what's the difference between doing something for everyone and being pandering? You know, it's like.
That's why it's fun just to sit back and watch. I'm in a unique spot where I could just sit and go, you know what? Let's go along for the ride and see what happens.
Yep.
All right, let's get back to Nick the musician.
Right.
Playing as a kid, a teenager, you mentioned, you know, wedding receptions and things, but a big bulk of musicians are playing in, well, as I say this, I'm looking at my 7-year old over your shoulder, are in buildings in rooms that typically aren't catering to the teenage kid.
No.
What were some of the places you were playing as a kid?
I played the Birdcage when I was 14. The old one before
it
burned down.
Cage.
Yeah, the old Birdcage, which was not a pretty little place. It was cool, but.
So
as a 14-year-old kid.
How did that work as a 14-year-old?
Well, my dad was in the band, so that's how I got in.
Well, yeah.
I'll tell you this. As a 14-year-old sheltered kid who went to a charter school in Chino Valley in middle school, the bathroom at the Birdcage was one of the most terrifying places in my life. I used to walk down here to Jersey Lily on break to use the bathroom here because it wasn't terrifying, but that one was terrifying. But no, I mean, it was fun. It really gave me the taste for, okay, I want to do this. You know, like, I get to, and I don't know, man, I feel so bad for the band I played with because I used to bring so much crap. And the stage in that place was really little.
Tiny.
Really tiny. And I'd bring a 7-piece drum kit. And I don't know how they didn't go, dude, are you kidding me? Like, somehow they just let this giant drum set take up their whole freaking stage, and they were just okay with it. And looking back now at 14-year-old Nick, I just want to slap him. Because if I had that gig now on that tiny little stage, it'd be 4 drums, not 7 of them. As all you have room for, you can take the hit. But it was fun. You know, I was playing there, and then I started playing with a guy here in town named Danny Romero.
I know Danny well.
Yeah, and so I started playing with Arizona Territory here at Jersey, and then out at Lucy's in Chino. And
talk about scary.
Oh, that was
Kim's
equally
like
terrifying
Kim.
as a kid. Definitely seen some bar fights at Lucy's, but you know, just playing around places like that, and then I ended up in a band called Mac Daddy, and that was the first time I was ever in like a band that my dad wasn't playing with. So, but by then I was like 18 or 19, and so at 19 you can work in the bars; you're allowed to work. Yeah. So then I was allowed to be playing in bars without my parents there.
And now, when you were younger, did you have to go in, play your set, and then exit out?
No, because I had my dad there.
Gotcha.
If he wasn't there, it'd be get out when you're on break. You know. But ultimately, depending on the bar, they can be a little bit more lenient.
Yeah.
And
what they serve, and they got a kitchen, things like that. Yeah.
They can be a little bit less, like, you know, if you're playing at some out-in-the-middle-of-nowhere type bar, they're not going to worry about it as much.
Yeah.
A main, you know, down here, like at Jersey or something like that, this is, you know, very populated part of town. I would probably not be able to hang out in the bar if my dad hadn't been there then. And either way, I was never hanging out up at the bar.
Yeah.
That was a place far too scary for me for being a little timid teenager.
But you've come a long way since then.
I definitely have.
I've seen you hanging out at a bar, too.
I have been known to visit the bar once in a while. Only occasionally.
Again, I'm only there observing.
So. Right, yeah. But yeah, so, I mean, I was playing at, like, we were the house band, Mac Daddy, at Pinyon Pines for a while there, back before it closed, after it was a strip club, not during. It was the time after that.
Did Ron Fox own it then?
I'm not sure who had it when it was a strip club. When I was playing there, a guy named Charlie had it.
Charlie.
And he had named it Pinyon Pines Longhorn North. He had a bar down in Phoenix called the Longhorn. And he got a tattoo of it on the back of his head right after
commitment.
He owned the place. Yeah, right after he bought the place. And less than 2 years later, it was closed. So now he's just got this tattoo on his freaking head. Of a bar he used to own.
Gotta buy a lot of hats.
Yeah, that's diving into the deep end. But yeah, you know, we played a lot of bars when I was growing up, and it was always fun. The Sultana in Williams was one we used to play a lot. A bar I'd never heard of, and then showed up and it said the world famous Sultana.
I love the sign. It's a beautiful sign.
Yeah, and it's a great little room. My drums always sounded really good in there. You never needed to tune drums in that room. Sound really good. But it was always a cool one.
Now, you've done some road work as well. You did some touring around with Sobo.
Yeah, Jim Sobo with the Howlin' Coyote tour. We ended up in the Bay Area. We played, we did San Francisco. We did the Golden Gate Park. We did Santa Rosa. Petaluma a couple times, yeah. Napa, I want to say Walnut Creek.
Walnut is Creek it
Walnut Canyons
there.
Here? Okay. Yeah. Walnut Creek. And there's another town, and I can never remember what it is. There was, because we did 7 nights out of 10 that we were there. Petaluma twice, San Francisco, Napa.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm missing a town.
Now, but were you on the inaugural Howl and Coyote?
Not the first one.
Group,
no, I was a few years in. I went in 2010. We accidentally won a talent show. We didn't know it was a talent show, a contest. Anyway, we didn't know that's what it was. We were lied to. We were told it's an open mic and they needed people. So I'm like, all right, well, let's get a guitar, and then we won. Like, whoops,
won what?
Yeah. So then we went to California. That was cool. It was nice. Right after, actually, I got back from Butte, Montana. Did a gig up there with someone else that was a nightmare, train wreck, terrible gig.
I was going to ask you, give me some bad road stories.
It was the worst gig I ever played. Was in the middle of nowhere, Montana.
Worse than playing with Danny Romero?
I've had some pretty rough gigs with Danny, and he knows it. More than once, I've quit talking to that man. I love him, but he knows my limits now, and my limits are directly reflecting his limits on whiskey.
And he's got some limits.
He does. Anyway, no, I
he
played up in.
He doesn't always know him though. Go
right.
ahead. I'm sorry.
I was playing up in Montana for some gigs. Someone lined up that they couldn't make, and so I went up to fill in. And everything about it was terrible. The person, I won't name names, but the lady I was working with was impossible.
It's not there, is it?
No, it's not Amanda.
Okay, just check.
So partway into, right before we got started playing, it rained just long enough to fry my amplifier. So I had no guitar amp.
Right.
What do you got?
Here.
Oh, no, I'm good. So just enough to fry my guitar amp. And so then I had no guitar amp. And so now I've, you know, 1,200 miles away. Yeah. So I borrowed, we had a fiddle player lady. So she let me borrow her acoustic amp, and man, that sounded like crap. My guitar, my electric Fender with the David Gilmour pickups plugged into an acoustic amp, not pretty. And then said fiddle chick proceeded to steal every single one of my guitar solos from me. I didn't get one. She literally took a solo on Mustang Sally and didn't give me one. Like, dude, a fiddle solo on Mustang Sally, and she took, we played 2 sets. She took, first set we didn't have a drummer. She could have told me she needed a drummer, not a guitar player, because she didn't need a guitar player, apparently. I could have brought my drums to Montana instead of my guitar amp that got ruined. And it was all bad. And just terrible. And it was supposed to be a good thing. Like, they didn't tell me until I was opening for Blackhawk from the 90s, the country band from them, and then Big Kenny from Big and Rich.
Wow.
We were playing 2 sets, and we played right after David Ball. And what they didn't tell me until I got to Montana is that, oh, no, we're not on the same stage as them. We're half a mile away over there. And are you kidding me? Like, I wouldn't have come here if I'd known that. And so they didn't tell me until I got there. And then all that happened, and she finally, I took off the next day, and I got halfway into Utah from 2 hours into Montana in a day. Screw this. I drove straight, no stops, into Provo in a day. I got to Provo. I was exhausted. She told me she'd pay for a room on my way back, so I'm like, I'm getting a room out of this chick. And called her. She was still at the music festival, and she said, I said, here, I'm going to put you on the line with the guy at the front desk so you can get him info and all this stuff. And she hung up on him. So I called him. I called her back, and her friend answered, and she goes, oh, yeah, she's in the bathroom right now. Can she call you back? I said, yeah. 20 minutes later, I called back. I said, look, I'm in Utah. Like, help me out here. And she goes, Jamie says it's a little bit high. Can you maybe drive around and find a Motel 6? I'm like, I'm in Provo. I don't know where a Motel 6 is. And long story short, I said, screw it, and just I ended up my dad paid for a room, and I drove back to Prescott more angry than I've ever been in my life, and just a week later we went to San Francisco and totally made up for it. But man, what a nightmare. Ugh, terrible.
Is the bulk of your playing, you like to stay closer to home, or
we just do stay closer to home. It's easier to play Jersey Lily because I live a mile from here, so it's, you know, easy to play here, and I love playing at Jersey. But, you know, I like getting out there, and I've played a couple cool gigs and stuff like that in my past, and so I like doing stuff where, you know, I get to open for someone, or I get to be on a cool stage or something like that. And
what are some of the bigger audiences you played to?
Well, the first one was, it wasn't for any particular huge show, but the 2001 Chino Valley Fireworks, They'd been rained out a few years in a row, but they kept buying fireworks every year. So they had about $11,000 worth of fireworks. It ended up being a 45-minute show. Yeah. And so the whole town showed up. There was 12,000 people there.
Oh, wow.
And I played one set. It was my mom had carpal tunnel, so her hands would get tired. So yeah. I played bass for one set. When I was, how old would I have been? I would have been 10 years old then. The bass was huge compared to me, by the way. A full five-string bass was gigantic. But I played one set for 12,000 people, and it was terrifying. By the third song, it was cool. But what's funny is with the money I got from that, I bought a pedal that I still use today. I've had it since I was 10. I still use that pedal. It's an awesome guitar pedal. Yeah. But that was probably the biggest crowd I've played for directly. But, you know, the cooler ones are always, you know, the opening gigs. I played a pretty intimate show where I got to open for Mark Chestnut.
Oh,
most
wow.
of my stuff has always been country stuff, but I played at the Museum Club, open for Mark Chestnut.
Nice.
And for years I thought he was just kind of uppity or something like that because we never even got to meet him. We hung out with his guitar player all night. Totally cool guy.
Museum
but,
Club flag?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But never did meet Mark, and no one ever mentioned to me until about 3 months ago that he was, like, deathly ill. The guy was crazy.
Oh, wow.
Like, it took everything he had just to do the show. He was so sick that he went back onto the bus and just basically worn out.
Yeah.
They just told me that. This happened, like, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
This whole time I've thought Mark Chestnut was just too into himself. Nope, guy was trying not to throw up on stage.
Yeah, trying not to get any on you.
Yep.
Do you have a preference on? Well, obviously, jerseys is a favorite of yours.
Yeah.
But do you have on size of rooms? Do you have a preference on whether it be a large room, smaller room?
The bigger the better, in my opinion. I like playing the big rooms. Honestly, that you get to use more stuff there.
Yeah, more toys.
And I'm all about the gear. You know, I like having way too much stuff on stage with me. So that's why you have my stuff in setup now. You can't see it yet, but. I have on my Jersey stage a keyboard with two pedals on that, my big amplifier. I've got a talk box like Joe Walsh uses or Peter Frampton.
Yeah.
A full pedal board that's just maxed. Two microphones. I run sound. I have a preamp. I mean, just a bunch of stuff. And it's not enough. I want more stuff. I like having too much to do.
Well, run through again your regular gigs.
Yeah.
Dates and times.
I play every Tuesday night with an acoustic duo, except this upcoming Tuesday. I'm going to go see Ringo Starr on Tuesday. So my partner, Sean, is covering for me solo. But Sean and I play here every Tuesday night from 7 to 10 here at Jersey. And then I play here solo every Thursday night from 7 to 10 every Thursday. And then every other weekend, my band, Little Larry and the Drive, play here Friday and Saturday night, 8:15 to 12:15. We'll be here this coming weekend, which is, what is that, the 18th and 19th, I think?
Okay.
What's today? The 13th? So, yeah, the 18th and 19th this month, you know, this weekend we'll be here. And we'll be here every other weekend. We're playing here New Year's Eve, which is on a Saturday night, so that's going to be awesome this year.
The boot drop.
At New Year's on a Saturday is going to be a crazy night at Jersey. I promise already we're going to be at max occupancy. This place is going to be jumping.
Very nice.
Yeah, always maxes on New Year's and St. Patrick's Day.
And releases, anything people can get from you? Do you have an online presence?
I kind of do. You can find me on Facebook at the direct is fb.me/Nikolai Guitar. That's N-I-C-O-L-A-I, Nikolai. And I am kind of working on, I'm putting together an EP at the moment, so that will be coming out. I'll be having that out soon, hopefully. Just the process of doing it between a day job and a night gig is kind of a slow one. But working on that one, hopefully that'll be out soon. It's work in progress at this time.
Very nice. But other than that, come see you live.
Come on up.
Sundays,
I'll be here.
Sundays, Tuesdays, Thursdays.
Friday, Saturday.
All right, I'll let you get set up. Thanks.
Right, well, cool.
I think we're about there.
Thanks,
Nick. Appreciate it.
Hey, no problem.
Well, that was it. I hope you enjoyed my talk with Nick over at Jersey Lilies. And if you take anything away from these episodes, this Mile High Show, it's get out there and have a little fun. Go out there, meet the guests that we've had on here, meet the artists, the musicians, the newsmakers like Nick. Sit back, enjoy their art, enjoy viewing and listening and taking in everything that they create for us. Get out and about. Jersey Lilies is a great spot. You can't beat the view out on the balcony, and you can't beat free popcorn. That's the big draw for me. Free popcorn at Jersey Lilies. I don't think they have that anywhere else on the row, at least not that I found. check out Nick playing with Little Larry in the Drive every Sunday, and then the other dates he mentioned, I think it was Tuesdays with the duo and Thursday solo. And anywhere else he's playing, we look forward to checking out his release. He talked about some recording that he's got that he's trying to finalize. So please do so. Support our local artists and support us. Support the Mile High Show. Check out milehighshow.com for our Amazon link. Do your online shopping and give us a little kickback by doing so. It doesn't cost you anything extra. How about clicking that Audible link and at milehighshow.com? Browse over 180,000 audio titles from books, magazines, lectures, all kinds of good stuff, podcasts, everything. You get a free download by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. Also, a free 30-day trial membership. Doesn't cost you anything. You can cancel it any time before that 30 days, and it won't cost you a dime. While My Guitar Gently Weeps, the music of George Harrison by Simon Lang, narrated by Lang, is a great way to introduce yourself to Audible by using the code MILEHIGH at checkout. What else? What else we got going? Also on the About Us and page, there's a link to the iTunes Mile High Show page. Please, this is absolutely free. It'll take you about 2 minutes. Jump on there and give us a rating, give us a review. It helps us boost our visibility. And also at milehighshow.com, there's a support the show link. Click on that, and there is a PayPal button right there. You can donate directly to the show. Anything, a dollar or two will help. Anything that you'd like to give us, we would appreciate it, because it helps us cover the expenses to go out and interview these folks like Nick Canuel and everybody else we saw and meet up with and talk with. So check us out again, milehighshow.com. Lots of links there for you to support the show. We would appreciate it in any fashion you can. Thanks for listening. This has been episode 114. Talk at you soon. I'm